Alrighty, Lionel, with you. Back from certainly not from a vacation, but back with a Lionel Media update. This is LionelMedia.com subscription podcast, intermittent, free or gratis podcast. You can reach me at Lionel@LionelMedia.com. Heard a Monday through Friday on Pix 11 News, WPIX.com/SolidusVirgulLionel. And all of that. First and foremost, to everybody who has been more than kind in offering condolences over my father's passing, I want to thank you very, very much. I've got to tell you something. It was such a such an interesting week. Last Monday, I received a call saying that my father had apparently either fallen, perhaps had a stroke, something that was obviously very, very wrong. And by 9 o'clock, I found out that he had indeed passed away. So I jumped on a plane, JetBlue to Tampa, and became a part of that routine with my sisters and my family. Let me tell you right off the bat, if you can learn from what I saw. One of the smartest things he and my mother ever did was to get a prearranged, I should really emphasize, funeral plan, which was great for a lot of people involved. First, it leaves nothing to guesswork. You do not find yourself prey to unscrupulous types and the like in the funeral business. The group that we were with, Roll and Curry, or Blunt, Roll and Curry, I mean, everybody in Tampa has been going to this place. I mean, I swear to you, I think I have been to this funeral home probably more than I have concert halls. I mean, everybody goes to this place. But they were terrific, absolutely terrific. And it was very, very wise because my father was going to be cremated and there was a viewing and it was all taken care of. Turns out the racket, if there is such a racket, is in the actual funeral notice. I had no idea. Believe me, you're not quibbling over prices, but that can run a lot. And I just thought that was kind of news. I thought, well, maybe these folks would just provide this for free. What a schmuck. Because after all, it's news. I think the information that they would provide, the least amount of information, would barely qualify as a tweet. So, in any event, I'm not going to quibble about that. But do yourself a favor. If you're listening to me, this is a great thing. I saw it in action. Get everything lined up. Oh, and by the way, make sure that you say specifically what it is that you want. Talk to your family members about death, about the condition of your death. Make sure you have it all taken care of. Is that the grave? Is that the visitation? Is that the cremation? Is that the transport? Is that the whatever? Because I was listening to talking to these funeral folks, and they saw many, many occasions where people thought that their parents had arranged the death and the burial. Well, it turns out they didn't. So that's a problem. So please do that. It's a very, very good idea. That aside, it taught me a couple of things, which is terrific. I have said this before. If you've listened to me in the past, you know that death fascinates me. And it fascinates me not because of the process, because the process of death is very, very simple. It fascinates me in that I am amazed at how mystical we get. I'm amazed at how religious and how people that I think are pretty with it can come up with just a variety of explanations as to what happens. And listen, maybe if 5 years ago even, I would have argued over the silliness of it. But everything from My father is with members of his family that predeceased him. He's happy again. He's whole. Whatever. And far be it from me, far be it, to sit and intellectually spar with somebody over the actual goings-on when one dies. I mean, how the hell can you even do that? How can you even say, even talk about this? But it's amazing, because what we're still doing and what people do is they try their best to humanize this very real sense of loss. He was here and now he's gone. As far as I'm concerned, and this is as mystical as I'm going to get, that which made my father who he was, that which was his essence, is a spirit, and I use that word not in the typical, you know, Holy Spirit, talk, but I mean the collective term for memories, history, impact, that lives on, for lack of a better word, that lives on, and that is something that, frankly, I think will always be there. I don't want to talk too much about this, because if you don't know this about me, while I like talking about things that are important and relevant, I never really like talking about things that affect me, personal things. For reasons that I don't really know, I can't really explain it. But I have a real, what's the word? I have a real allergy towards schmaltz. You see, everybody, I think, who is out there, everybody camps everything up. Everybody uses every event for self-promotion, self-pity, self-aggrandizement, attention, you name it. Whether it's TV, politics, name it. I would not have mentioned anything about my father's death, except for the fact that I'm on TV and people want to know, and I didn't want people to think that, oh, you know, you've fallen off the face of the earth, or quit, or worse, or what have you. So that's about as far as I go, because it's an amazing thing. Let me tell you what else what I learned. I really learned how much, and I never knew this, how much it means for people to come to pay their, quote, respects. I never understood that before. Honestly, I thought, okay, you know, it sounds almost like, you know, very Godfather. I'm so sorry for the loss, or whatever. But it really is a statement both for their thoughts of your loved one, of your loss. It's very, very important. Very, very critical. And I never knew that. I never knew how I would feel. So I'm going to go to every funeral or every memorial anybody has in the future, because I want people to feel good about this. Both that their loved one meant something, and that their particular loss, to me it's really the former. It's not that somebody thought about me or my family per se, but that they recognize my father. That's all. That's it. And I'll tell you, it was one of the best run. How do I say this? I was dreading the visitation like you cannot imagine. Because, again, it's that schmaltz factor. I don't know why. It's just an allergy I have towards people who, and you've seen people who just camp it up. They really do. It's like, look at me, I'm bereaved, I'm mourning, look at me. I hate that. But let me tell you something, it was great. Great seeing people that I haven't seen in a long time. Great seeing people who thought enough to show up. Like I said, it changed my view of funerals, because or that whole process. Because I'm telling you, when we look at how we handle death, it's kind of funny. Now, let me just back up and tell you the interesting thing about this. When we went, I think it was on a Tuesday. Tuesday we went to the funeral home, and they were terrific. We had a young man, I'm not going to mention his name, he may not want this, but he was just terrific. Very, very good. You could tell he was just a professional. Young man, been in the business. So I've got my mother, my sisters, my cousin. You know, we're all sitting around there. And I'm trying to add a little levity towards the event of the final remains and the final procedure, you know, cremation and what happens and death certificate. And I remember in this same place, oddly enough, when my grandfather had died 30 years perhaps before, or yeah, maybe so, 30 plus years, my father and I were in this same place laughing as we were finalizing his death, you know.
It's 3 o'clock.
Uh-oh, top of the hour, 3 o'clock, everybody. But as we were talking about this, my father and I were laughing about how stupid this is. And I was 20 something, and I remember at the time saying something to the effect. They said, "Well, you know, we're going to make sure that your grandfather." I love the way they made this sound. My grandfather was 80 something when he died, but we're going to make sure that your grandfather was.
Weather information
Well, let me
for.
turn this damn thing off. Sorry about that. We're going to make sure that your grandfather's vault is waterproof. We're going to make sure it's waterproof. And I remember at the time saying, "What difference does it make? He's dead." You know, that seriously. And I didn't mean that. And my father and I were laughing. And you know, here I am. We didn't get into that part. as far as whether he was waterproof or not. But anyway, but as we were looking around this room with my family, and I'm trying to, you know, be add some degree of levity to this whole event, I noticed the schmaltz. First, there are the military themes, then there's the brocaded or the pillows that you can provide with a fish, you know, a snook, a bass, freshwater versus saltwater, Masonic labels. The urns, how much they were. I mean, it was just amazing how 500, $600 for a vase. Notice I don't say vase. But the one that got me, and I have to share this with you, the one that got me, which was amazing, was the a balloon. Let me see if I can get this straight. There was a balloon that you could put the remains of your loved one in this balloon and have the balloon sent up, and somehow I don't know what happened to it. And I'm sure there's an environmentalist somewhere who's thinking it's going to be linked to, you know, I don't know what, who knows, maybe dolphins will eat it, you know, or who knows. But I thought, this is $600. And they show these people, well, it's kind of like a weather balloon. You know the weather balloon, which is always, any UFO sighting is always a weather balloon. So it's one of those, got a big thing and made of lycra, whatever the heck it's made of. Anyway, you inflate it and you send your loved one out into the ether or the ionosphere, wherever it is. And I thought, this is just too much. I mean, just too much. How? But then again, you know, why not? You know. So anyway, I don't want to belabor the point. I don't want to get into it. So please, 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 just my father was a great guy. He really was. Honestly, one of the best guys. I think that's one of the most profound things you can tell about somebody. Is you just. I mean, he listened to people, he cared about people, and that's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. Everybody else is such a dirt bag in this world. They're so full of, he used to always say, so-and-so was a four flusher. I love that. Kind of a Bat Masterson card sharp card cheat theme, I guess. I don't know, but in any event, so he was just a wonderful guy, and that's all I want to say. That is just it. Now, what happens is sometimes when people die, there are folks who pour it on a little thick, and they tend to overdo. Not in his case, mind you, but in others. You know, not everybody who dies is a nice person. Some people were jerks in real life, in their actual life, and the fact they're dead, it doesn't necessarily absolve them of that, but that certainly was not the case here. So anyway, so then flying down, that was it. So I took off, went to Newark, flew JetBlue, which is the best. Went into, you know, no problems with TSA. But sure enough, coming back, and I didn't have it in me to put up a fight. I noticed at the Tampa airport, they did this to my wife before, but they, sure enough, they've got their rapid scans lined up. There was no magnetometer. Everybody's walking through with their arms up, you know, so that the radiation hits you. And this is serious stuff. I'm not trying to belabor the point yet again, but I guess I am. There is something to be said about this, you know, the fact that it's backscatter ionizing radiation. Plus, your head is exposed, and a lot of the cancers, melanomas, or whatever are in the head and the face area. And anyway, so I said, no, I'm not going to do this. So I get this opt out. And basically, you kind of felt up. And I just sat there and I looked at this guy. And if I tried, let me see if I can explain this to you. If I tried to look at him with a look of disgust, that was my goal. My goal was to look at him and to make him feel like, what a scumbag. He's looking for PETN. I don't follow any profile. Old, it's just stupid. But I didn't have it in me to fight him. I just looked at him. But I know this is audio and you can't understand this, but there was a look like, you silly son of a gun. Look at you. What possibly did you ever do in your life to warrant this? This is what you want to do? Is this the big time for you? Is this it, Barney Fife? Is that it? You glorified Skycap with a badge? You're running your hands up the back of my hand, up my legs, down my back, in the waistband. You've got to be kidding. Checking his hands for powder residue. And all this is, and you know it and I know it, is a systematic breaking down of your will to resist. That's all this stuff is. But like I said, I didn't have the guts. Not the guts part. Far from that. I didn't have the spirit in me to describe to him, but I looked at him. So as he's feeling me up, he says, where are you heading? I'm just looking at him, like through his soul, like, you are so sad. You're the guy. And I don't want to be the one, I swear to you, I don't want to be the kind of person who is making all the Nazi analogies. You know, Godwin's law and all this being what it is. Look it up, for God's sake. But you know that during internet chat, the principle is that certainly in a discussion within the next amount of time, somebody's going to bring up Nazis. And I understand there's a balance, a very important balance, between recognizing the fact that Nazis occurred, but don't cheapen and liquidate and dilute the importance of Nazism in our history by analogizing everything to Hitler and the Nazis. You know, you really do a disservice. I understand it. But the moral of the story, what is important, that you can bring up, without bringing up Nazis, is that in every totalitarian regime and every example of psychiatric testing since from the Milgram experiment to the Stanford prison study to you name it, people will do horrible things to others without questioning what they're doing. I'm not suggesting that the TSA, you know, pat downs and feel ups, if you will, or somehow tantamount to pushing people on cattle cars to their death in the work camps. I'm not saying that. But the same process exists. That same mindless obeisance, that same Pavlovian hypnotic obeisance to following the law for some bigger good, you know, and the love of the badge and authority and the uniform and fighting terror and every meme, you know, we'll give you a badge, we'll give you federal status, we'll give you frontline status in the war on terror, even though what we're doing is we're basically providing revenue for Michael Chertoff and the Rapiscan people, whom he lobbies for. And we're going to use this overblown threat of terrorism to do all this. And people are going to get used to it. We're going to go eventually to cavity searches on the street. You know that's what's happening. That's what this is. But I got to tell you, it's just, I mean to tell you, it is, we're so incredibly stupid. We really are. You know, I had a thing one time recently where this woman was listening to some of my work. And to make a long story short, there was a business venture that was offered, and I respectfully declined because, without going into detail, it just wouldn't have worked out. And one of the things that bothered her very much was I was talking about how stupid Americans are and how stupid people are who walk around with their American flag lapel pin, and that there's an inverse proportionality to the size of a flag pin and their knowledge of either American history or constitutional rights or what have you. And she took great offense at it. Well, not offense, but she says, you know, people are going to take this the wrong way. Well, let me tell you something, goddammit, it's true. We don't get it. We don't get it. We cloak ourselves in the cloth of patriotism. We are into semiotics and into symbols. We love that. From support our troops to, you know, love it or leave it or whatever the heck phrases du jour. It just amazes me, and I see this. Now, let me jump to the subject. I'm not going to waste my time with this. Over the weekend, I was watching the news of what's happening in Egypt, and I'm going to be doing much, much more about that, discussing, you know, parsing it and kind of explaining a little bit more about what's going on. And I've got to tell you this much, and I'll just leave you with this. Perhaps. The American mainstream media are stenographers. What they do is they are amanuenses, they are secretaries, they write down whatever the administration tells them. Whatever it is, however it's displayed, however it's described, however it's, name it. That's all they do. And they could not care less about going deep at all. In fact, this whole thing, this whole business with terrorism and Egypt, and, well, first of all, nobody really knows anything about that. Our media do not go behind the scenes and ask what any of this means. The only thing that our media seem to be interested in doing is providing a variety of video pieces and video clips and people throwing Molotov cocktails or burning overturned cars or whatever it is. That's it. No explanation as to who Mubarak is, why after 30 plus years all of a sudden they're doing this, why is the administration turning their back on them, explain how the globalists work, Who's Al-Baradei? What's going on? You're also going to see this, and I'm going to do this later on, but you're going to see this rise in this almost frantic explanation or warning about the Muslim Brotherhood. Mark my words, that's critical for you to know, because that's their scare tactic. Because remember, you're always best controlled when you're the most frightened. When you're constantly worried about these people, when you're concerned about the Islamic fascists who are ready at any moment to storm our horizons and to unleash this fury against the infidels that the Quran, which nobody has read or interpreted or studied or understood. And by the way, would you like somebody reading portions of the Bible and speaking on Christianity by references to Ezekiel here or Exodus here or Leviticus or the Pentateuch here and there or First Timothy about women usurping the rights of their husbands to tell them to shut up? I mean, do you want somebody doing that to Christianity? Well, no, but they're doing it to the Quran. It doesn't matter. They're going to keep this meme up. What they're doing right now is they're saying that the Muslim Brotherhood, just the name, ooh, that this is, that we have to, you know, up the ante in the Middle East. Actually, it's Africa, but still, but up the ante and up the, you know, the drones and the military expenditures and the money and the costs, you know, the war on terror. Don't, we can't let up now, folks. That's what they're going to tell you. Mark my words, that's critical to this whole thing. They're going to have to do that. They're going to have to continue this. And what the media does, what our media do rather, it's a plural noun, is that they just provide they're stenographers. And it's evidenced by how freaked out NBC and Comcast was with Dicci Oberman, who basically was four on the side of Oberman. I mean, just imagine. And you might ask, well, wait a minute, but why did they do something about Fox? Well, I don't know. I don't know. But right now, with everybody so scared, they're just writing down whatever the White House press secretary says. That's it. That's it. Don't go any further. Don't, God forbid, explain anything. This is the whole point, the essence of what I've said, well, from the beginning. If you want to know what's happening in Egypt, do not listen to American media. In the old days, the right wing used to love to say, you know, this is nothing but a bunch of liberal, the liberal media. Okay, fine. It's the corporate media. The part that you have to understand, the thing that is the most important, is that the media are only going to report that which fits a corporate mold, if you will. Next, the media are unimaginative when it comes to looking behind the story. If you look at foreign media and alternative media sources, foreign magazines, Al Jazeera and the like. I'll give you an example. Al Jazeera is one of the best. Now, Al Jazeera, let me back up even more. Please, I apologize for saying something and then stopping because something will hit my mind and I have to explicate it just a tad. First, always ask yourself this question. Who is in charge of X? Who owns this? What is the story behind it? No matter what it is, no matter who it is, if it's Obama, if it's John Boehner, if it's the Muslim Brotherhood, if it's Al-Qaeda, if it's Al Jazeera, stop. And the first question you should always ask is, who runs this? Who are these people? Most probably they're a front for something. Or when I say that, I don't mean a classic front. I mean they're backed by something, you know. Whenever I hear of a terrorist organization, no matter, pick whichever one you want, Al-Qaeda, the first thing I want to know is who came up with this one. It has been documented by some sources, and you can read the documents for yourselves, that the Muslim Brotherhood was basically the creation of British intelligence, that Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda is indeed the same. You have to have a tangible, palpable, understandable enemy that Americans will demand that we do something about. If you try to sit back and explain to folks, not keeping in mind The Power of Nightmares, a great BBC documentary by the same name, but if you don't explain to them how there is a story, a meme that is provided. Remember, let me back up. Remember when you were a kid and your mother said, make sure you come back, be careful because of the boogeyman. The boogeyman was an explanation for a variety of terrible, awful things. It was a personification of every evil without really going into detail. What was it? Was it a person? I don't know, but still be careful of the boogeyman. The boogeyman's going to get you. Well, right now, the boogeyman that we have is Islamofascism. Now, what I want to do is this. I want to stop for a moment, and I'm going to be, frankly, breaking this down a little bit more, especially in the paid podcast and the like. This is kind of a gratuitous freebie, as it were. But right now, there is a world that is going more and more to a unified, global, uni-governmental, uni-jurisdictional, just a one world, one international order or government. That's where we're going. You're seeing the consolidation of powers around the country via the unions, the EU. You can see the African Union eventually. You'll see the Pan-Asian and Asian and North American. This is where we're going. And everything that I'm telling you, every single thing that I'm telling you is written down. It has been exemplified, or explained, I should say, excuse me. But our American media, in this distaste for appearing to be conspiratorial or non-stenographic, and the mindless reporting of the president, they're not going to go beyond it. They're not going to explain anything to you other than how, or I should say what, the government gives you, what the White House gives, what the official story is. They're not interested in any of this. And I will leave you, I've said I'm going to leave you about four times now, and I mean this. There is a myth in this country that is so pervasive. You know, as over the weekend I ran into a friend of mine. We were sitting around, you know, after the funeral, and we're talking about stuff, and he has a, well, he fancies himself kind of as the prototypical right winger, you know, to the right of Attila the Hun, you know, those guys who are proud of it and all this stuff. Hates Nancy Pelosi. And I said to him, I said, you realize that the left-right paradigm is an illusion. That this idea of there being a duality of forces that are pitted against each other, that they're somehow representative of conflicting, diametrically opposed ideas, you do realize it's all fraudulent. That what's going to run the show eventually is a globalist elite, a group of people. And when I say this, I'm trying to find a way, frankly, to repackage it so it doesn't sound so frightening, because it does sound frightening, because it is frightening. But there are people in the world who see things in a different version. Brzezinski is one. Kissinger is another. Anybody from Europe, the European Union, Gordon Brown, Tony Blair, any of those guys, they see us being a part of this ultimate unified field theory, in essence, of politics. And right now, we're going to provide you with the idea that the United States of America will always wave its flag, but eventually we are going to be ceding jurisdiction to something bigger. So when you see things happen like this in Egypt, when you see things happen in Yemen, or you see things in Tunisia or wherever, understand, ask yourself, who's responsible for this? Who are the agents provocateur? Who are the intelligence agencies behind this? Who is promoting this chaos? Who is fomenting this? These problems? Who is responsible for this? Because that's really the questions you have to ask. Ask yourself that question. Not, gee, look at this. You know, when you see the story of Egypt is, a group of people, typical story, over two-thirds of the population are under the age of 30. They are tired of Mubarak, the dictator, and they want transparency and freedom, blah, 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 blah. Great. That's the official story. Now, look at what's happening in terms of how we are behind this move, how we, and I mean we, a part of a bigger globalist whole, prefer somebody perhaps maybe that we can deal with, somebody that we can talk to. And by the way, I don't believe anything that I see. The analogy was made years ago that what governments are, what regime changes are, in essence, or I guess you might say, different shields that people hold up, a shield that one would hold up like he would a battle shield. And that the shield takes as much assault and as much dents and wear and tear. And eventually when a new shield is needed to protect that which is shielded, basically the superstructure of the world, we get a new shield, a new regime, a new president. Bush, Obama, Brown, Blair, whatever, they come and they go. But basically, they're just out there to keep your attention off of what's going on. The world is run by the Goldman Sachs of the world, by IMF and World Banks, and it's nothing that we've been told exists. What we're looking at is the Mr. Smith goes to Washington, kind of a Potemkin village of Washington, where we hear people discuss, you know, Boehner and Michelle Bachmann and the Tea Party. It's a diversion. Imagine looking at the world of professional football. And I can look at a variety of different ways. I could look at the professional football from the parking lot attendant of a given stadium to the cheerleaders to a team to the special teams coach to the managers to the front office to the presidents to the NFL organization to this superstructure, no matter how high I get in this pyramid, I can look at it from a variety of different ways. And if I go to a football game on a Sunday, I can no more glean or no more learn what has happened or what's going on in the world of professional football than I can to understand the superstructure of the world by watching Meet the Press. That is so frontline, that is equivalent to the cheerleaders or the parking lot attendant, as opposed to what's going on in the real world. When Hillary Clinton gets out in front of people and provides this statement as a Secretary of State, this is coordinated not with the President of the United States, but with the world. What happens is this globalist move is so protected and so shielded, perhaps deliberately, perhaps inadvertently, perhaps innocently, by a group of people who are scared by a media that cares not to expose, to illuminate, to ask questions. I mean, never, ever, ever has the real goings-on of the world been so protected and so camouflaged by a media that actually protects public scrutiny, that obfuscates, that obscures. I'm sorry, I keep saying I'm going to leave you with this. The first thing that went in Egypt during the problem, and I don't know, as I said, whether Mubarak has a deal. He says, look, you know, I've got my gold. By the way, they always take gold. You notice that? They never take paper. They never take stocks and bonds and Apple stock. They take gold. Ain't that something? But anyway. But they might have gone to Mubarak and say, okay, look, let's make this look good. All right, you know, fly you out to Paris and live in exile. Live wherever you want. I don't care. Who knows? I have no idea. Nothing would surprise me. But the first thing that they did during this alleged breakdown of communication was a breakdown of communication, namely killing the internet and Twitter. And what's also interesting to note And what's critical to see is that we could have this happen here. When you look at the streets of Cairo and Suez and Alexandria, ask yourself the question, could you ever see anything like that happening here? That's all I'm going to say. So let me just wrap up by saying to those who sent messages regarding my father's passing, I appreciate that immensely. I really, really do. Let me just remind you, drop me a line at Lionel@LionelMedia.com. I'm going to get busy right now. I'm still researching and going crazy over this Egypt thing. I've been kind of, you know, off the out of the loop this past week, but I find it absolutely fascinating. Go to alternative media. Go to foreign media if you want to find out. So thank you for your kind wishes. Drop me a line at Lionel@LionelMedia.com. Watch me every night at Pix at Pix11 or Pix.com/Lionel or Pix11.com or whatever the hell it is, WPIX.com news. And until we see again each other or listen to each other again, thank you so much. But always question this. Question, remember, it's an illusion. As great Paul Harvey would say, a good day.